Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to head inside the film room and break down the tape. The FantasyGuru.com weekly matchup podcast is on. Here's John Hansen and Greg Cosell.
Welcome to the Week 13 matchup podcast here at FantasyGuru.com. I'm John Hansen. It's Thursday, December 3rd. Week 13 kicks off tonight in a battle over in the NFC North. The Green Bay Packers at the Detroit Lions. Our guy Greg Cosell is here to break down the entire slate of games here in Week 13. First, a reminder, if you are not a subscriber to FantasyGuru.com, you can subscribe now for 2016. Can't believe I'm saying that, 2016, and get the rest of 2015 for free, which does include NFL playoff content. We cover the games all the way through the Super Bowl, so if you want to play daily fantasy in the playoffs, we got you covered there, all free if you subscribe now for 2016 at a price, by the way, that's the same price that it was in 95. So that's 21 years there. We also want to apologize for the sound quality of the podcast. Blog Talk Radio had us on a hi-fi connection all year, and all of a sudden that stopped. So probably we're going to say goodbye to Blog Talk Radio next year. But we do say hello to our guy Greg Cosell, who's on hold here. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, John. How are you today?
Good. And we're ready for week 13. We're in the teens, which means we're winding down. So we're going to keep it rolling and finish strong, like they say. Finish strong. You're in television, Greg, right? Everyone always says, finish strong, right?
That's right, right.
They do. I say, let's finish in mediocre fashion. How about that? No, they don't like that.
Let's do that. I like that.
I've done that in years past, I'll be honest, because we get very tired. Let's talk about tonight's game, and that'll kick it off here. Green Bay at Detroit. And if the subscribers of FantasyGuru.com are listening, which I think they are, I did like Matt Stafford this year as a nice value. Him and Tannehill, basically. We'll get to him. But, Stafford, as I've said for weeks, I don't feel like he's been part of the problem in Detroit. Granted, not merely part of the solution early on, but how has his tape looked lately?
I think Stafford's played very well in the last number of games. I think you're seeing a quarterback that seems to be very controlled in the way he's playing. I think he has a good feel for this offense. It's easy to say, he and Jim Bob Cooter get along. We're not there, so we don't know what the dynamic is. But you're still seeing some of the typical Stafford throws, the really good throws. Hit Calvin Johnson for a 24-yard touchdown against the Eagles. That was about as big time a throw as you'll see. But I think he's also been very and I used the word controlled a moment ago, but I mean willing to take shorter throws when they're there. Excellent use of Riddick coming out of the backfield. He's become a real factor in their pass game the last 2 weeks. So I think it's an offense now that has multiple dimensions, and he's running it efficiently over the last number of weeks.
Yeah, you think Bill Belichick would like to have Theo Riddick? I mean, he is, a very good receiver out of the backfield, and he really seems to understand the voids in coverage. It seems like he's always open. Now, unfortunately for Stafford, they won't have Lance Moore. It may not seem like a huge loss, but he's been a pretty nice contributor in this offense. Now, talk about this matchup here for Green Bay. I look at Green Bay every week, and they're pretty good. They don't have a dominant pass rush, but I think that they're holding up pretty well in the back end and stop the run pretty well. So I'd imagine we'll see Sam Shields on Calvin tonight.
I would think so. I mean, don't forget, this is a division game, so these teams know each other. You have the familiarity. There's no issues. This game's in Detroit. I would expect the Lions' offense to be fairly sharp. And the Green Bay defense, you're right. I think it's a very solid defense, but they don't rush the quarterback really well. They try to scheme that at times.
Yeah, and I also wrote a lot, if I'm the Lions, and of course I'm not, but about 3 weeks ago, I wrote it for our waiver wire report because a lot of people dropped Amir Abdullah. And my contention was, you know what? I think I'll take the fumbling in exchange for an effective running game and maybe even, some explosive plays in the running game. We're not exactly seeing that, but we're kind of starting to see Abdullah emerge here a little bit. Unfortunately, Joik Bell is still in the mix here, and Green Bay is good against the run. So it's not a beautiful matchup for Abdullah, but he is getting the ball now, and that they've balanced it out a little bit, and I think that's probably been a key. They've run it just a little bit more lately,
yep.
And that has really helped. Now, on the other side, Greg, the matchup I'm looking at to me is clearly Randall Cobb. Darius Slay has been lights out, and he's not playing the slot. So I think Randall Cobb for the Green Bay Packers is the key player.
Well, when you think of the matchup, yes, if he's in the slot, he'll get Quandre Diggs, the rookie from Texas. But that offense has been a little out of sync. Now, they've put up theoretically numbers, but it's definitely been an out-of-sync offense. And I think that there's blame to go around, but it does include Aaron Rodgers. You know, he's kind of his rhythm is different than the rhythm of, let's say, a Tom Brady, a Drew Brees, but he's off with his rhythm. And he's missing some throws. His precision accuracy hasn't quite been there. He's left a few throws on the field as well. So there's certainly blame to go all around.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I mean, I'm just trying to give people an edge for fantasy. And if there is a guy who can kind of
no question,
pick it up,
it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is Randall Cobb in the slot here. But we all know Eddie Lacy. I didn't give up on him either, really, is starting to come on here. How has he looked on tape? Do you, when you watch the tape, do you harken back to the Eddie Lacy of old, watching him the last
couple
of weeks?
Yeah, he's run through arm tackles, which is his game, because he's not what you'd call a quick back. He's a power back that has some short area quickness, but he's not really a laterally agile guy. But he works through confined space with a combination of power and some quick feet. But he's run through arm tackles, and that's important because that's his game.
By the way, it is important to note that the Packers have several offensive linemen on the injury report here. So Bulaga didn't practice all week. That's not good. TJ Lang, Lindsey, and Treader were all limited. So they may have to reshuffle up front a little bit. That probably won't help, nor will the matchup, Greg. This Lion defense, you know, a lot of people may not know. Everyone knows Haloti Ngata, but a lot of people may not know some of these other players, you know, after they lose Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley. But, you know, you study the tape here. They're pretty stout up front. I mean, this is not an easy matchup for the Packers running and passing game.
No, they've been very good up front. They have a nice rotation. Ansah's really good. Ngata at deep tackle's good. Jones is, as I've said many times, their version of Michael Bennett. Plays D end and D tackle. He's long. He's athletic. Devin Taylor, about 6'7", 6'8", plays D end. Karen Reed from Princeton has come on at D tackle. This is a really good defensive front, and their linebackers have played very well over the last few weeks.
Not a great matchup for either running game, really. The Lions, last 4 weeks, giving up 2.6 yards a carry to running backs. The Packers, over that same span, are giving up 2.9. So we may have to sling it around a little bit more than most teams, I think, in this game, because both offenses have struggled to run the ball all year, and the matchup's not great. Moving on to the Jets at the Giants. I continue to be amazed at the receiving core that the Giants have, and amazed at how bad it is, really, considering the fact that Eli's still put up some solid numbers.
Right.
But, man, wow, it's like I just look at, you know, Reuben Randall, I think, is not good. Dwayne Harris is just the guy. You know, you got Danelle out. It's actually kind of amazing that Eli Manning has done what he's done. I know Victor Cruz, by the way, is 29, and who knows if he'll ever be totally back. But I did write this past week, if you're in a keeper league, you know, get Victor Cruz. I mean, if the guy can ever get healthy in this offense with Eli and Beckham, he's going to do very, very well. So this is, I'm talking for next year and beyond. But this matchup here against the Jets, what do you think of this Jet defense as it stands now? It does not look like Darrell Revis will play, and obviously that is good news for Odell Beckham. But do you see the Jet defense? I mean, look, they're talented, but they've given up numbers. Do you see this Jet defense as being one that can really disrupt Eli?
You know, again, the nature of that pass game is pretty quick. The ball comes out. You have to play those kinds of routes. You know, obviously Beckham can run by you, but he's the only one who really can run by anybody. So, you know, the Jets, are, I think, have been a solid defense all season. They haven't been quite as dynamic as I might have anticipated, knowing Todd Bowles. But they're a solid defense, and the Giants can't run the ball at all. That's a big issue. Last week, they didn't even try to run it. Now, they got down, but they abandoned the run game. And for the most part this season, there's been no balance to their offense because of that inability.
And you watch the tape. Does it strike you at all that they continue to rotate in all these backs? I mean, I feel like they should – I mean, Rashad Jennings, I believe, has signed a 2-year deal. I guess he's maybe not effective, but they insist on giving the ball to Darkwa and Andre Williams. But well, I know you think Darkwa is probably their best option, right?
Probably, but they're telling you how they feel, John. I mean, you know, I've always said that. They're telling you how they feel about their backs, and they know their backs better than you and I do. So while you would probably like one back to get the majority of the touches from a fantasy standpoint, they're telling you how they feel about their backs. They think Rashad Jennings is just an average back, which, when all said and done, is probably what he is.
Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, you got some bigger backs here who we'd like to see them, you know, be able to get into a rhythm a little bit, and that's been impossible this year. For the Jets, you know, Chris Ivory is a tough call for me because, you know, I watch him every week, and he did pop off a really nice long run, a violent run last week, but otherwise he's really been contained. But the bigger matchup, the better matchup here, I would think, is for these wideouts. Once again, you know, Fitzpatrick coming off a big game, he's been much more consistent, a little more accurate, I think, this year. You could touch on that. But talk about this matchup against the Giants. I still don't see a great pass rush, and I still think this secondary is very beatable.
Very. It's not a very good defense. You could argue the best part of it's their front seven, but they do not have a strong pass rush. Their secondary is really problematic. And the Jets have, for the most part, thrown the ball well this year. Now, they don't have they're trying to work Devin Smith in. He gives them speed at receiver because Marshall and Decker are not those kinds of receivers. You know, Marshall's essentially almost like an athletic tight end at this point, but he can still win. And he certainly makes contested catches. Decker, I think, to me, has had a really good season. And he lines up in different places. I think the Giants will struggle to stop this passing game.
Of all the two receivers, who do you think has a better chance to take advantage of these safeties? Because we know the safety play is not great. I would say Decker, who does line up inside.
Decker does line up inside more than Marshall, although there are snaps in which Marshall is the inside slot receiver in 3-by-1 sets. So you could see that more this game. But Decker tends to work the middle a bit more. So, you know, Decker's had a really solid season.
Oh, no question. You know, he's got good sneaky movement. You know, he's not a burner, obviously, but he gets separation all the time. Probably due in large part to route running as well. He does have some shakier hands. I think he dropped a touchdown. It may have been last week or the week before, but he scores almost every week. It's unbelievable. And, of course, Marshall is unbelievable as well. Let's go to the Texans and the Bills. Boy, we were talking in September how bad this defense is, and let's just flip the switch because it's the complete opposite. And it's not just the front seven dominating, right? You like the tape and what you're seeing on the back end. You know, Kevin Johnson, the rookie, Joseph, the secondary in Houston is also good, right?
They've played well. I mean, you know, sometimes it's not just looking at an individual player. We've seen that with Carolina throughout the year with their safety. Sometimes it's not looking just at an individual player, but it's looking at how the unit plays as a whole. And this unit, as the season has progressed, I mean, they've won 5 of their last 6. And I think in those 5 victories, they've allowed an average of 11 points a game. So this defense is playing well. And it's not an explosive big play offense, so it's not as if they're winning games, you know, 35-10. They have tough games, competitive games. This team has turned into this defense has turned into a very solid defense.
Yeah, and last week the Bills, I was shocked that they did what they did. I was very skeptical of Tyrod Taylor's ability to get the ball to Sammy Watkins down the field. I understand they just saw some single coverage looks and they went after it and they made the throws. I mean, I'm not exactly seeing that in this one, Greg, against this Texan D.
I would think that won't happen. I would think that the Texans D will provide a different kind of challenge because the Chiefs do have a good defense, but a different kind of challenge. They're not going to line up and play pure man. They'll play snaps of man, everybody does, but they'll do more. They'll play more zone. They'll make it more difficult for Tyrod Taylor to make throws, and I would expect his numbers would not be as good this week against the Texans as they were last week against the Chiefs.
McCoy running really well, but we know Houston's pretty damn good up front. They are giving up fewer than 4 yards a carry to running backs the last month, haven't given up a rushing touchdown. They do, for what it's worth, and it's worth a lot actually for McCoy, give up 7 grabs a game to running back. So McCoy's just getting it done big time with volume. We can move over to the other side of the ball now, and you kind of touched on it offensively. It's a little bit of a problem that we've kind of noticed the last couple of weeks, although we thought last week it could be a higher scoring game with Breeze and the Saints. This D is so darn good now that, you know, they're not going to be playing from behind. And when that's the case, it looks like they really want to manage Brian Hoyer. I mean, they don't have Arian Foster, but they certainly don't want to sling it all over the field, and they likely won't have to thanks to this defense.
No, and that's – look, they know what Brian Hoyer is. Bill O'Brien's been with them for a long time. I watched the tape from this past week against the Saints. I didn't think Hoyer played that well, but they were able to control the game, make a few plays. They do some good things. You know, it's basic concepts in the pass game, but they do just enough with some really good principles to get receivers open and enough intermediate throws. But it's a basic pass game, and the run game is they stay balanced. You know, they don't have a dynamic runner, but they stay balanced.
Does Stephon Gilmore, he doesn't travel, does he, for the Bills?
Normally not. Normally they line up Gilmore on the right and Darby on the left.
Right. So, but he will be, I think that is where Hopkins normally is.
Yeah, and Hopkins didn't do much with this week against the Saints. I mean, he's a really good receiver, we know that, and he's put up great numbers, but this week they didn't really target Hopkins, you know, the way he's been in previous games.
Yeah. Alfred Blue, for what it's worth, is definitely getting about half the snaps at running back and getting a healthy number of touches lately. I mean, he's not dynamic by any stretch, but I think he's a little bit better than maybe given credit for. They have not really run the ball all year, and that includes Arian Foster, by the way. But for what it's worth, Blue is getting the ball here. And we'll keep an eye on Ryan Griffin, the tight end, because suddenly Bill O'Brien has had an epiphany. Oh, look, the tight end is a position in the NFL.
Well, you know, Well, it's funny you say that because this is why it's great for fantasy, but I'll just say be careful because the touchdown was an improvisational play in which Griffin was not even in the route concept. It was an improvisational play. So he gets a touchdown, great for fantasy, but he had nothing to do with the design of the play. And then there was a really well-designed play in which he caught a 37-yard pass, which was geared for him, but it could have been. It wasn't geared for him because he's Ryan Griffin. He just happened to be that player. So, you know, again, if they throw more and he's playing, he'll probably catch some balls. But it's not as if they're designing plays for Ryan Griffin.
Right. Yeah. It's just that he has been a factor after coming off the IR. He's got 6 targets in one game, 2 and 5 this past week. That's an improvement over the other tight ends. And you know, it coincides with him returning from the IR because, you know, I guess it's just not happening with C.J. Fedorowicz and Garrett Graham is MIA. We spent way too much time on that, so let's move on to Baltimore at Miami. And I know you haven't studied the Raven D all that much here, but they have
not,
improved.
Not in the last couple of weeks, but.
Yeah. They have improved by the numbers against the pass. Then again, they haven't really faced many great passing games. So it'll be interesting to see if Miami in this game with Bill Lazor fired, we all know they'll likely commit more to running the ball. We can get your thoughts on Jay Ajayi's role going forward because I think it's increasing. But, Greg, it'll be fascinating to see because the 14th pick of the draft, Devontae Parker, is expected now to start for Rishard Matthews on the split end there at X. And do they take some shots down the field a little bit to Parker, Greg? Because, boy, that has really been a missing ingredient. That's probably why they got him.
Well, you're going to find out. They drafted this guy in the first round. I think that He's a long angular receiver with theoretically vertical ability. Because of his size and length, he can go up and get the ball and make 50-50 catches. They need to find out, and we'll see. We don't know what this offense will be. I personally would like to see Jay Ajayi get more carries. I'd like to see him be a little bit more of a feature back. And Parker, like you said, they need to find out.
You think Jay Ajayi is a feature back in the NFL? Granted, I know a very limited sample size, but you studied the tape here. We actually had him as our number two running back pre-draft, before the draft, right after Todd Gurley. We had Gurley at one, Jay Ajayi at two, and then we look like some dum-dums when he gets drafted only in the fifth or sixth round, whatever it was. But, this kid's got size, movement. I love his balance. I mean, I think he can be a feature back. What about you?
I thought that when he came out, and I thought he had a multiple skill set as well. I know people are concerned about his knee, but I'm surprised over the last couple of weeks that he hasn't had more. I thought they'd get him involved more, and they haven't. And now with the new coordinator, you have no idea what he thinks. So this game to me, and it probably for you as well, it's a little bit speculative.
Yeah, no question about it. But we do know that Lamar Miller is in the final year of his contract, and these running backs are a dime a dozen.
They're not re-signing him, and he's not going to get a lot of money anywhere else.
Yeah, there should be no urgency to bring him back into the fold. Of course, we have to see who the new offensive coordinator will be and all that. But Jay Ajayi I wrote last week an article of a bunch of young players to acquire now for keeper leagues and dynasty leagues. For the Ravens, Javorius Buck Allen did about as exactly what we thought, actually. Not outstanding. But, he caught four balls. Schaub is Schaub. This Miami defense, do you think that they're talented enough to kind of shut down this Raven offense as it stands now in Baltimore with their personnel, which is not impressive?
I think that for the most part that their front seven is pretty solid. I think you're talking about Miami's defense, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think their front seven is solid. I think their back end has been somewhat problematic this year, with the exception of the safety, Rashad Jones, who I think has had a really, really good season, a really good season. But I think other than that, I think, their front seven's been pretty good.
Yeah, but also I know on the back end, Brent Grimes is kind of falling off a cliff here, so we don't know what the heck is going on there.
He has, and that's, he struggled this year.
Of course, we are talking Kamar Aiken and Chris Givens here. It's not exactly a frightening matchup there, although Aiken did come through last week. Moving on to Cincinnati at Cleveland, and again, we're in uncharted territory, really, with the Browns and their offense,
yes,
with Austin Davis making the start, so I don't have a ton of insight there. And how about that Gary Barnage, though? I mean, that's really been impressive. I mean, I think he's kind of for real, by the way. I mean, I know he's 30, but just as an aside, I mean, Gary Barnage, his production, I mean, it's not a fluke. I mean, this guy is a pretty damn good receiver.
Yeah, he is. He came out, I remember, and people sort of viewed him as pretty much a receiving type tight end, not a blocker.
Right.
But he was never seen as quite athletic enough to be one of those guys. And I think he's, while you wouldn't put him up at the athletic level of the Tyler Eifert or the Jimmy Grahams, I think he moves pretty well.
Yeah, I noticed that as well, like 6 years ago. And he's, and I talked to Greg Olsen about him. He was behind Greg Olsen.
He was in Carolina, yeah.
I mean, that's an all-pro player there. So he's going to get the ball, I'm sure. And then, of course, Travis Benjamin's had a nice year. Duke Johnson may be getting a little bit more involved in the running game going forward. But I think kind of Duke Johnson, I remember you were pretty skeptical about him as a feature back. I mean, he's a smaller back, and, nothing's changed, right? I mean, he is a complimentary type player, like a 1A type of guy. I don't think he's ever going to be a lead back.
More than likely. Yeah, I didn't think he'd be a lead back. He's got a lot of ability, and he's a terrific receiver. Lead back is a relative term, John, depending on the nature of your offense. I don't think he's a lead back. If you want to line up and run the ball with the gap scheme run game, running power, running those kinds of runs, and have that be the foundation of your offense. But I think if you're a predominant three-wide receiver offense with more spread concepts, more shotgun, then I think he can be a quote-unquote lead back. Because in that offense, normally the back's not a 20 or 22 carry a week per guy.
Does he compare to Giovanni Bernard in terms of what Gio's role has been?
I would probably say that's a relatively fair comparison. Yeah.
I think Gio is a little bit better of an inside runner so far in his career than what we've seen from Duke, but yeah.
Well, Duke showed that in college.
Yeah, gotcha. I mean, he's the all-time leading rusher at the U.
Yeah, he showed that in college.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think we've seen the best of Duke Johnson by far. I mean, this year, I'll say that too. It's been a bit of a mess here, obviously, with all the quarterbacks in and out of the lineup here. And for Cincy, I guess Joe Hayden is likely out again, and that's certainly good news for A.J. Green. But I will say this. I remember in that first matchup, I thought Tremont Williams played A.J. Green pretty well. So I'm not sure A.J. goes off here, and I actually do think Marvin Jones may be the guy to look at. But we'll see about Tyler Eifert, too, because he didn't practice early in the week. But, Greg, if there was ever a week, and Jeremy Hill talked about this, that he's been a little bit of a victim of the game flow, if there was ever a week to get him going in the second half and say, here you go, we're up two touchdowns, go run the ball and you know, grind it out and finish this off, I mean, this has got to be the week for Jeremy Hill.
If that happens, yes. But overall, I'm not sure they think that way about Jeremy Hill, John. Yeah. I mean, yes, if they get up 31-10, what you said could absolutely happen. That'd be great for fantasy. But as far as going forward and with Jeremy Hill as someone people would want to have, I'm not sure that they think that way about their – this offense is not – as we all thought, including myself, before the season, there's no way they think this offense begins with Jeremy Hill.
Right, and I think a lot of that is a function of how well Andy Dalton's played and the emergence, of course, of Tyler Eifert, because we didn't exactly expect them to be a pass-first offense, which basically they've been this year. You know, they really have been. Moving on to Jacksonville at Tennessee, these teams played each other several weeks ago on Thursday Night Football, and they both played pretty good defense. But, you know, Tennessee, we'll start there, is, wow, I mean – you use that phrase, tough watch. this is probably a tough watch, right? I mean, they stink. I mean, they just don't have any talent, right? And, you know, it's no running game and receivers, as you've noted to us earlier in the week, these guys don't get open.
No, Tennessee does not have much offensively, and we probably don't need to spend a lot of time. They've got an offensive line that's played at an average to below average level for the most part. They've got a minimal wide receiver core now that's not very good. They can't create and separate versus man coverage. They can't run the ball very well at all. And they've got a young quarterback who's actually played very well given those circumstances. But their offense is not very good.
I know you notice on the back end there in Tennessee that they certainly do have issues. Their best corner, McCourty, is long gone. Bleedy Ray Wilson is beatable. So I would think even without Allen Hurns that Bortles is looking pretty good. He's starting to click here with Julius Thomas, which is certainly a good sign. Bortles is still a guy who throws it to the other team, but you know, that's a chunk play offense. They get the plays down the field, and Allen Robinson is a, you know, borderline stud. But can you back us up on TJ Yeldon? Because I pumped him up 3-4 weeks ago as a guy. Look, trade for him now. He's a talented young back. He looks good. He's getting the ball. He just doesn't produce, Greg. But when you pop in the tape, you like TJ Yeldon.
Well, he does produce. He produces when he gets the ball. They don't give him the ball. So I know what you mean by doesn't produce. He doesn't give you fantasy numbers. But he produces. He just doesn't get the ball. So if he runs 12 times and gains 51 yards, that's producing. But you'd like to see him get it 20 times and get, you know, 98 yards or 100 yards. But that's not what's been happening.
Yeah, he feels like he's like just 5 to 6 carries short of doing what we think on the, in the running game, and he doesn't get goal line opportunities. We all know what happened a couple of weeks ago with Toby Gerhardt getting four straight carries on the one and got stuffed four times like a turkey on Thanksgiving. Moving on to the Niners and the Bears. And we'll start with, dare I say, your guy, Blaine Gabbert. But I'm kidding, half kidding. You know, he's been, dare I say, a professional quarterback, and he's got some life. You know, he's got some mobility, a pretty live arm. You know, he's helped this offense, and very much so, Greg. Blaine Gabbert.
John, I couldn't agree more. I mean, when you watch this offense now, it has the look of an NFL offense. He's played with relative efficiency. You have to remember they have very little on the outside at wide receiver, and they have a below-average offensive line. And they still, over the last 2-3 weeks since he's become a starter, there's been a rhythm to their offense, an efficiency to their offense. Now, I know the response, oh, they don't score a lot of points. That's correct. They do not. And obviously, that's what you have to do. But if you're just looking at it as an absolute and watching the way the offense is being run, it looks like an NFL offense, which it didn't before with Kaepernick. Now, they're playing with a back in Sean Drawn, who is kind of an interesting player. He's a compliment. I mean, now he has to be the feature, but he's a compliment. In some ways, he reminds me a little bit of Jeremy Langford. You know, they have nothing on the outside, and it's become a tight end-centric offense.
Yeah, and I know Garrett Celek earlier in the year, a couple of weeks ago, was doing pretty well, but I'm actually intrigued by Vance McDonald because, as you know, Greg, he was a really intriguing player, 3 years ago, coming out of Rice. You know, his versatility and athleticism was like, wow, this guy could be a player. You know, you never know. I mean,
looking back, John, because you know who the two tight ends on Rice, they came out the same year, were McDonald and Luke Wilson of the Seahawks.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
They came out the same year from Rice. Yeah, and McDonald was considered the far better prospect because his size, his movement. But, no, it's a tight end-centric offense right now because when Celek went out this week, Blake Bell came in and he caught balls.
Yeah, absolutely. So the what we like about Gabbert is we've got a chance now with the tight ends, with Anquan Boldin. I know that he's really getting up there, but, you know, he'll make those contested catches. He'll have a guy all over him, but he'll still haul in 4, 5, 6, 7 balls, which he has the last couple of weeks. And, of course, Drawn, he can get him the ball in the passing game, and that's critical in the fantasy world. Drawn is dominating the touches. On this matchup, though, Boldin, I liked a lot last week, but these Bears do play a lot of man, and that does scare me because I can even go back, 7 years ago when Anquan Boldin struggled to get open versus man. Do you think that'll be the case here?
Well, I think these receivers do struggle against man, and the Bears they mix it up. Vic Fangio does an outstanding job. You know, again, I felt this defense would be a lot better than people thought, and it's played out that way. I mean, over the last 5 games, they've given up about 14 points a game. They're the fourth best pass defense in terms of yards in the NFL. It'll be very similar as it is every week for the Cards, for the 49ers, which is one reason they don't score a lot, is they can't really run the ball when they get closer down into the red zone, and their wide receivers don't provide a whole lot.
We'll see about Navarro Bowman, who is not practicing early in the week here. That could just be, you know, a rest situation for a veteran. But you're not – well, you are of the opinion that this 49er D is not bad. You know, Eric Mangini has seemingly done a pretty good job here. I like the matchup overall for Cutler, but your thoughts on where the Niner D is right now?
It has a little bit of a week-to-week feel. They've played really, really well at home and not as well on the road, which, you know, again, that happens in the league. There's no X and O reason for that. I think Mangini, with what he's working with, has done a very good job. I mean, a corner they've played all year, Kenneth Acker and Brock. They need to upgrade at that position. They don't have a true pass rusher. I think Aaron Lynch can become that guy, and I think you see a lot of flashes from him. I think their run defense out of their 3-4 has been pretty solid all year long. They struggled in the secondary. That's been their main issue. There have been games this year where they've been absolutely torched.
Yes, and Martellus Bennett will return for the Bears, which helps. And you got to think Jeffrey's looking real strong here against Kenneth Acker and Tremaine Brock.
I would agree. They'll line him up at XISO, and Cutler will throw him the ball.
Moving on to Seattle at Minnesota, you do have some interesting thoughts, and it's amazing how the narrative can shift during a season. But all of a sudden, you're watching the tape, and Russell Wilson is not playing playground football. Has he been under center more? Is this a function of, you know, having a great running game behind him? What do you see when you watch Russell Wilson the last 2 weeks?
I don't think it's a function, quite honestly, of any of that. I think that Russell Wilson has played from the pocket. I think it's been a number of things. I think the route concepts have really helped. I think he's hit his back foot and delivered the football. Last week, from the pocket, he was 19. And when I say from the pocket, I mean with timing and rhythm, okay? He was 19 for 26 for 316 yards and all five touchdowns. And I think that he's played much better now. I've always been of the belief, based on years and years of film study, I think quarterbacks make their offensive lines, not the other way around. Because in the NFL, sure, are there going to be plays where a bad O-line just gets beat? Yes, of course there are. And there have been numerous plays like that in Seattle. But you could make an easy argument that, you know what, the Patriots don't have a great O-line. When your quarterback plays with timing and rhythm, hits his back foot and delivers the football, that takes care of your O-line. That camouflages and compensates for its weakness. And Wilson, the last 2 weeks, has done that. So I'm looking at him as an ideal, as an absolute, not in conjunction with the run game. He's played at a high level the last 2 weeks, and that's the way you need to play in the NFL.
Boy, I'm sure they look at the last 2 weeks, and they would be thrilled if Wilson did this every week, because it's perfect, really. He's throwing it 29.5 times a game the last 2 weeks, completing about 75% of his passes for 600 yards, and he's only run for 44 yards. So the numbers really bear out what you're saying here.
This week he left the pocket twice. Once he shouldn't have, and the other he was forced to. Other than that, he didn't leave the pocket. And there's a reason that he's playing well from the pocket, because he's staying there. I mean, the biggest indictment you can make of a quarterback when you're a defense is, we want him to stay in the pocket. That's an indictment. You know, I don't think people think of it that way, but it's an indictment of a quarterback when you say that.
This week, though, against Minnesota, no Jimmy Graham. They do play a lot of zone. What do you think of the matchup there for Wilson?
Tough matchup this week. Tough matchup. They're a really good defense, really disciplined defense. They play zone, but they will match up. Xavier Rhodes is a matchup player at times, so it's not going to be just straight zone by any means. They're a quick defense, a fast defense. I think their linebackers and nickel are very good. I think they're fast. You know, Barr and Kendricks can run. So this is a tough matchup for Seattle. If Wilson can do he won't have the same numbers he had last week at home against Pittsburgh, but if he can play a similar game against this defense on the road, then he's really, I don't want to say he's turned the corner, but I mean then he's evolving into the kind of quarterback he needs to be not a function of a team, but more of a lead dog. See, when you play randomly, you become a function of a team.
Yeah, and I would think that they won't need to really force the issue throwing it, because Minnesota on the other side
They won't score a lot.
Yeah, and Teddy is another guy to me is a tough watch. The passing attack is really kind of it's just, I don't know what it is, quite frankly. I mean, Stephon Diggs has fallen off here. He had a taunting penalty last week that probably didn't help.
I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, he was active early on that first drive, had the taunting penalty, and he only caught one more ball the rest of the day. And the one guy I'm looking at here is Kyle Rudolph. I mean, he's a big presence over the middle, and this Seattle defense has been somewhat disorganized in that region of the field against the tight end. But overall, tough matchup here, obviously, for the Vikings.
I would agree. Their pass game is very limited right now, very limited. And that's why they're playing old school NFL football. Run the ball, play good defense. Your quarterback's a compliment. Don't want him to do too much. That's the way they're playing.
Carolina at New Orleans. Yet another tough watch here. The Saints. It's it's tough to feel confident here. God, I got to think that, you know, they're going to get Josh Norman on Brandon Cooks, and that's scary. Willie Snead still dealing with a knee issue. You know, is this a matchup in which the Saints, even at home, could get stifled? They got stifled last week.
Yeah, this is an odd game, I think, for me, because the Saints every once in a while kind of play like, you know, you would expect them to, but they just haven't done it very often. And for those who believe this is their season, all that stuff, I mean, if you want to factor that in. But if you just look at it based on the matchups and based on how the teams have played throughout the course of the year, it's hard to see the Saints really moving the ball with any consistency against this Carolina defense.
Carolina's not going to change what they do.
No.
But when they do go ahead and throw, I'm guessing we'll see Burrow on Teddy Ginn, who's the bigger threat. I mean, Burrow travels.
Yeah, well, didn't last week. Did not play Hopkins.
Okay.
So that's week to week with Burrow. You know, he had traveled for a number of weeks, did not travel last week, and did not play Hopkins.
Oh, okay. So I guess it's not a lock. But you would think if they do want to travel him, Ginn would be the guy. I do think maybe Devin Funchess has a little juice here, but you know they do what they do, and they should have success obviously against overall a defense that's not good in New Orleans. Although look, they're getting they're probably not a sieve, right? Because you know that was Dennis Allen's first game, and they did play better, right?
They made a couple changes. He played no snaps of dime, which had been a major part of Rex Ryan. He played only nickel. So Browner did not play the tight end. Now, that could change this week. They're playing one of the top four or five tight ends in the league. So they could go back to putting Browner on Olsen. But last week, against Houston, who does not have that kind of tight end, clearly, they played no dime. Not one snap of dime.
And Olsen went off in that matchup, by the way. Two touchdowns, well over
100
yards.
That is correct.
Yeah, he killed them. Atlanta at Tampa Bay. I think you've seen the Falcon tape here, and you know I'm feeling some dysfunction. They had a players only meeting this week.
Never good.
That usually means that things are not going well.
Right.
They don't have a. You know, I don't think the Panthers are having a players only meeting right now to you know rejoice over their undefeated record. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing too because. You know, Matt Ryan has arguably the best running game behind him this year as he's had in 5 years. But, you know, the only thing I can hang my hat on is that, you know, this new scheme is not really working in Atlanta. I mean, what do you see with Matt Ryan on tape?
I see a guy right now who's not real comfortable. I don't think he's turning it loose. He's not letting it rip. He's tentative in the pocket. And he's making poor decisions. And he's making some misreads, which leads to poor decisions. And it's really noticeable in the red zone.
Wow. And this Tampa D, they did light it up against them earlier this year. And it's certainly a beatable secondary in pass defense. But, you know, they are improving every week. We know they're pretty darn good against the run, obviously. So Freeman may have to do it in the passing game in this one. Jameis Winston, your thoughts on this matchup? I would think this is a fairly basic defense for him to prepare for. Therefore, he should have some success.
I would think so. And he's done well. He played against him a number of weeks ago. I thought he was efficient in that game. Threw a beautiful touchdown pass in which he totally understood the rules of the coverage, which was cover three. And that's one thing that Winston has shown this year is a very good understanding of the rules of coverage. I would expect the offense for the Bucs to be pretty good in this game. I would think Winston would have a good game, a very solid game.
Arizona at St. Louis, these teams met earlier this year in Arizona, and while Palmer did put up numbers, 300-plus, he did only get the one touchdown. I'm a little concerned about this matchup for the Cards, but I guess, Greg, does it simply come down to whether or not Quinn plays for the St. Louis Rams?
Well, he's a huge factor. When you play the Rams D, you're playing an aggressive D that's a little unconventional, that at times, it seems when you watch film, there's two or three plays a game in which they have busts because they're so aggressive. And if you can take advantage of those busts, then you've got something. But they will get you as well. That's the thing. They will make plays against you because of their aggression and their looks and their pressures. The big key in the previous game when they played earlier this season in Arizona, the Cards marched up and down the field. They had about 450 yards of offense. They weren't stopped the way we think of stopped, but they couldn't score in the red zone. Now, one was on them. David Johnson dropped an easy touchdown. But the others, when they got to the red zone, they only scored one touchdown in five trips. The other three, they were stopped. The Rams did some really good things to stop them.
Yeah. The concern, of course, they're going to be at home on the carpet, and they can be a lot better in that environment. Of course, we'll see about Quinn. He didn't practice Wednesday.
The Cards are also faster on carpet, too, because they've got speed at receiver.
Tremaine Johnson did not practice as well, and he's a starter. Your thoughts on David Johnson as the lead back? I mean, he's certainly passes the eyeball test. What do you think he'll? How do you think he'll perform in that role? I mean, it's a tough call here, but he's going to get the ball.
Probably similarly to Chris Johnson. I mean, don't forget, over the last month or so, Chris Johnson's numbers started to slip a little bit after a couple of big weeks. You know, they run the ball to stay balanced. They don't run the ball to throw it. If the game plays out the way they want it to play out, he'll get probably 16, 17 carries, and barring breaking a run, which, you know, always inflates numbers, he'll probably rush for 70, 75 yards.
By the way, if Quinn is out especially, I mean, I do think that, as you mentioned there, these Rams, they do have some busts. I mean, look at last week, A.J. Green, they forgot to cover him in the red zone. So I do think that John Brown is a good play. Not so much Michael Floyd, but Larry Fitzgerald, he is, as I mentioned to you earlier in the week, he's like their slot receiver and their tight end, and he's going to get balls every week, mainly over the middle inside.
Yeah, you know, could be, you know, these division games, and I don't know how you feel, I find these division games to be particularly difficult. You know, I guess who's playing quarterback for the Rams this week?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, Case Keenum was limited on Wednesday, so we don't know. I mean, you would think they'd want to go back to Case Keenum if he's cleared from the concussion protocol, so we'll see
Foles
about
was
it.
Terrible but. Last week was absolutely terrible last week.
Yeah,
you know, their problem on offense has been Gurley. Has, you know, the last number of weeks they've not been able to get the run game to the point where it can be their offensive foundation. And if they can't do that, they don't have very much at all. Then it becomes, you know, sort of gimmicky plays like Tavon Austin. You know, those are gimmicky plays. Those are not plays, foundation plays that you can rely on a weekly basis.
For what it's worth, did you see any deficiencies in the Cardinal? I know you saw the Cardinal defense, and it feels like they're, you know, beatable. I mean, they're not like a shutdown D right now against the run.
But they're fast. I mean,
yeah,
they're not a shutdown D, but they're fast. They're quick to the ball. You know, you're dealing right now with an offense in the Rams that's just not very good at all. You know, any offense can hit a play here and there, but this offense is not sustaining anything.
By the way, for what it's worth, Larry Fitzgerald, one of the reasons I brought him up is, you know, you mentioned divisional games. He has seven or more receptions in five straight games against the Rams, 6 of 7. So even back to 2012, he has been a volume type receiver in this matchup. Moving on to KC at Oakland, and I know you're impressed with Carr and the way he's throwing.
We've talked about him. Yep.
Talk about this matchup here against KC and this pass rush. Justin Houston is banged up, dealing with a knee. But is this a worrisome matchup for Carr against KC? It's in Oakland. That probably helps.
You know, to me, the Chiefs defense, it's a really solid front seven. And I guess even without Houston, I think it's still a good front seven. I think they're a good defense all around. I think you're dealing with a team that has good weapons on the outside in Oakland. Seth Roberts, I think, has sort of morphed into their third receiver, and he's been pretty good. The issue for Oakland, in my view, is I think their O-line still is not quite where they want it to be. And I think that they they don't run the ball with any consistency. Murray's not that back. So if their run game gets shut down and there's a lot of longer yardage plays, then that benefits the Chiefs, clearly. But overall, this is a really good pass offense with Carr.
Yeah, that's the one thing that worries me, and it kind of the back of my mind, I have a week-to-week feel for it because their running game is terrible, so they can't run it.
It's terrible.
So that does concern me a little bit. I would think we'll see Marcus Peters, the rookie, on Cooper with Sean Smith on Crabtree. I mean, those guys
that
are
makes sense.
Hardly – yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Probably not shutdown guys, but certainly, you know, a pretty challenging matchup. And for Casey, and look, they're starting maybe to take some shots, Greg. I mean, can we call them a shot play offense? I mean, they're taking some, you know, they were doing it earlier in the year, then they weren't, and now maybe they are starting to take some shots, run the ball, take some shots down the field to Macklin.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the way they have to make big plays. They have some really good pass game concepts that they use with Kelce. They have some concepts they use with Macklin. But, you know, they're not by nature an intermediate vertical passing team. I thought one of the most interesting plays last week was the touchdown to Kelce in the red zone, where they lined up with three tight ends, John, knowing that they'd get Kelce. The play was designed for Kelce. They knew they'd get him matched up on a corner, and they still wanted that. I mean, that just shows you, you know, the kind of player Kelce is. And I know his numbers overall may not be riveting for fantasy, but he's clearly a matchup weapon for them.
Yeah, he's not a volume guy, but he's clearly someone that they appreciate as a big time asset and matchup nightmare guy. So if they hit the big play or the design play for him, it's going to look great. If not, it's going to be so for fantasy because he's only going to get seven targets in a game if he's lucky. Denver at San Diego, and your thoughts on Brock Osweiler. I thought he hung tough in the pocket, almost to a fault. He got the crap beaten out of him on some hits. But, you know, he can sling it, and, you know, I think he's doing pretty well, and obviously he's helping out the running game.
Well, again, we've discussed this. You know what the numbers are. We don't need to go over the numbers in the run game. But Osweiler, I thought, played really well given the weather conditions, the fact that he had to come from behind, the shots he took in the pocket, the quality of the defense he was playing against. I thought he played smart, poised football, made some big throws in the fourth quarter. Clearly, they're running Gary Kubiak's offense now.
And I think for Demaryius Thomas, that was a tough watch on TV on Sunday night. Boy, he's struggling, not fighting for the ball and coming back to the ball, but they did have that one connection down the field. I think he's going to likely be on Jason Verrett, who seemingly travels. And I got to think that's a good matchup. Verrett's only 5'9", Greg, as you know.
You would think, absolutely. And Verrett clearly is utilized as the number one corner for the Chargers. He's that guy. I mean, I've been watching the Chargers D pretty regularly, and he matches up. Now, it's not every snap, but he matches up. He's their clear number one corner who they want on the opposition's number one receiver.
C.J. Anderson, I'm not sure if you studied the tape, but...
I did.
Okay. Is this the typical Kubiak running game that we've seen the last couple of weeks? And if so, is Anderson a good fit for it?
It is the typical Kubiak run game. And, you know, I think it goes back to that old argument about, you know, the backs in that kind of run game, because it's the Shanahan run game. You know, when all those guys gained 1,000 yards. I mean, look, Justin Forsett gains 1,000 yards last year. You know, Anderson, could he be that guy? Probably. And obviously, you know, it's easy to say he's running better, but I think that the run game is certainly providing opportunities. I mean, that 48-yard run was really – that touchdown was really well blocked, and he basically was untouched. It was, by the way, the exact same run on which Hillman scored a 19-yard touchdown in the second quarter.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I did see that. And for the Chargers – tough matchup, obviously. I think DeMarcus Ware could return, and the Chargers still do have some injuries on their O-line with DJ Fluker. I think King Dunlap is going to return here, but you know, Phillip Rivers has not put up numbers. I mean, in this matchup, it could be a shootout. It certainly could. Divisional game, you never know. But I mean, can you envision a scenario in which the Chargers have a tough day offensively? I kind of can do that.
Tough day offensively?
Yes. With the pass rush and the tougher matchup.
They're going to have to throw it. I mean, Rivers will stand in there and he'll try to make throws. Normally he does, but you know, they're limited. They're limited because of their O-line. They're limited because they can't run the ball, and they've tried to run the ball, John, as you know, in recent weeks. They can't run the ball.
Let's move on to Philadelphia at New England here. We're almost winding down here, and, you know, it's a tough for me to handicap what the Patriots are going to do because we have no idea. And for me, it's like I keep saying on the radio, they are a blind spot for me because – I try and figure out what teams are going to do, and every time I have a guess on the Patriots, it's the exact opposite. But you know, but this week here against the Eagles, they just had to put Nolan Carroll on IR. So I'm thinking that, you know, we're going to see Danny Amendola on the field, and also Brandon LaFell, and I'm thinking that it could be LaFell on the rookie Eric Rowe, and also Byron Maxwell. So, I mean, if that's the case, these are favorable matchups for New England, correct?
Yeah, I mean, look, New England is a very scheme-driven offense. They'll take a few shots. They did last week in the bad weather where they threw it down the field. I think you'll see Chandler be a much bigger part of this. And he did have a ton of targets last week. I think he had 10 or 11 targets last week. But I think you'll see him be a major factor in what they do in the pass game.
You're not loving the Eagles' linebackers and their ability to shut down a guy like Chandler right now, huh?
No, and I also think you're going to see Bolden and White on the field together.
Right, right.
They did that a number of times last week. Yeah, they'll look for matchups, and they'll find them. You know, Kendricks really struggled last week against the O'Riddick in coverage. You know, the Eagles will be in an interesting situation because one thing that the Patriots are really, really good at is they're very multiple from a formation standpoint out of base personnel. And if the Eagles have D'Amico Ryans on the field, if they choose to match up that way versus the Patriots' base personnel, which is the way the Eagles normally match up versus base personnel with D'Amico Ryans in the game, they'll find D'Amico Ryans in the pass game.
There you go. So it could be a little similar to last week when they got Brandon Bolden as a dynamic receiver out of the backfield.
Yep.
Okay, so there it is. And any feel for the Eagles offense in this matchup? I mean, is this is hardly a get well matchup for a struggling offense. We'll say it that way.
Yeah, now is Ryan Matthews out again, do you know?
Doesn't look good. Looks like he's going to be out again.
If he's out again, I mean, clearly it's Murray who's, you know, all you can do is look at the film. He's not very good right now. He's a slow back. They keep running him to the perimeter. Their run game is really inconsistent, and their pass game is the same. The Patriots are a man-to-man defense, John, and they're going to match up. Now, we don't know the exact matchups because they don't do the obvious, but they'll match up. And I would expect the Eagles, again, they hope to win on snaps with tempo, but they can't win just based on their personnel. The Eagles, unfortunately, on both sides of the ball, are a slow team.
Wow. And look, Logan Ryan did a hell of a job last week. And also Malcolm Butler. I mean, they've done it again. They lost Cromartie and Revis, who've had down years. And all of a sudden, I think that Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler are better right now than Revis and Cromartie have been this year. It's amazing. So we move on to Indy at Pittsburgh. These teams met last year. It was a bonanza. Big Ben threw 6 touchdowns. He was unbelievable. Nothing's changed, Greg, with their personnel in the Colt defense. So if Big Ben is cleared to go, I would imagine he'll have a lot of success in this matchup.
Well, I think this offense does have success against anybody because of the combination of weapons, concepts. It's a good offense, and they've got a lot of players, and they've got every dimension you want in the pass game. They stress defenses at every level. I would agree. This will be a tough matchup.
Indy's offense hanging in there. Pittsburgh very good against the run. So Matt Hasselbeck may have to sling it around a little bit, and he's been very, very capable. And finally, Dallas at Washington. Greg, give me the Cliff Notes version of how you think this will play out in terms of Kirk Cousins at home playing pretty well, but Dallas's defense is no joke. I mean, I think they're still very, very respectable, and it likely comes down to Morris Claiborne's status, and I don't see him on the injury report, so I assume Claiborne's going to go.
If that's the case, you may see Byron Jones play Jordan Reed. Now, Jones has not done that in recent weeks, played the tight end. He did earlier in the year and played tight ends really well. This may be a matchup where they need to do that because of how Reed is utilized. That's a matchup I would expect to happen if Claiborne goes. We can't say for sure, but I would look for that.
Greg, we're going to wrap it up here. It's at the top of the hour, and we've got to run. So we thank you for your time. We wish everyone good luck in Week 13, and we'll talk to you next time here at FantasyGuru.com.